Hi, welcome to the Top 100 Project with Ryan and Bev Ellis. If you're a new listener, we invite you to check out our introductory podcast, our prequel episode, if you will, where we talk about our project analyzing the American Film Institute and their 1998 and 2007 lists of the greatest American films ever made. Warning, there are spoilers ahead. This podcast is meant to be listened to after you've seen the film.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
All right, everybody. Thank you again for listening to our movie podcast, The Top 100 Project, with its 17th movie in the series, and it is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. This groundbreaking animated film was 49th on AFI's 1998 Top 100 list, but then had the pleasure of cruising up 15 notches to 34th spot in 2007. The first time it was between Jaws and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and the second time it was between One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Annie Hall. Snow White premiered in time for Christmas on December 21st, 1937. Then RKO officially released it for all to see on February 4th, 1938. Yet again, a Top 100 Project movie was a massive box office success, especially after all the re-releases, which was vital because it cost about $1.5 million to make, a giant sum in 1937. And if I may nutshell this movie, Bev, while defending their volunteer housekeeper, gem miners commit voluntary manslaughter of fruit peddler. So here's Bev with the skinny.
An extremely vain and jealous queen orders her innocent scullery maid stepdaughter named Snow White to be killed when the queen discovers Snow is the fairest in the land. The terrified girl escapes and hides out in the forest with seven diamond mining dwarfs, who are happy to have someone to cook for them and to clean their pigsty of a house. But the queen is still intent on seeing Snow White dead at any cost.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so, animated classic, Bev. First color film we've seen, the first Blu-ray we've watched, and the first animated film we've seen on the list.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I don't even know where to begin because there's so many ways you can measure how important this film is. Of course, as an animated film, people expected it to be a failure. They thought that Disney was ridiculous. They called it Disney's folly because they knew he was spending so much money and resources on a feature-length animated film, and they thought it was going to be a huge flop, but it was anything but. And then since then, animation has been a gigantic genre, and straight-up children's movies have been a gigantic genre.
You can almost print money with them.
Oh, yeah. As we may discuss later, the film had many re-releases, which is part of the reason why it's made so much money over the years. But I remember my father, who grew up in rural New Brunswick, told me that this was the first movie he ever saw in the theater and one of the only movies he ever saw in the theater as a child. Yeah. It was a hugely popular, incredibly influential, significant movie. I'm surprised it's not higher on the list just because of all those reasons. And it is still, all these years later, a great movie. Like, it still really stands up. The artistry is just incredible. You can't watch it and not marvel at the beauty of the animation. It's really, really lovely. All the motion and the characters, and, you know, they do what most good animation does, which is they have their characters do things that they could never recreate with live action. They do these impossible things, impossible acrobatics or expressions, and there's so much imagination in this film. There's so much I could say about it. I will say, like, I am historically not a fan of either animated movies or children's movies, so it's not my favorite. It's not a movie that I'm gonna want to go back to over and over again, but it's impossible not to appreciate the masterpiece that it really is.
I didn't think you liked it when we were watching it.
I know, I just don't. It's just not my thing. I have a cold, dead heart. I don't care for children's movies. I really do. And you know what? Even when I was a kid, I didn't like most of the princess movies. They weren't really my thing. I remember I loved Dumbo. Dumbo was my jam. But when I watched Snow White when I was a kid, I remember finding it, like, dreadfully old-fashioned.
Interesting that you'd feel this way, because it's actually a story of vanity, selfishness, attempted murder, and platonic living arrangements.
What are you saying, sir?
It's very grown up. Apparently, the Grimm's fairy tale, and it is based on a Grimm's fairy tale, involves beheading and everything. I think they behead
and
the queen.
Yeah, she eats. There's cannibalism even in it.
Some horrible things.
Other than, like, removing some of the gruesomeness from it. It was quite loyal to the Grimm's fairy tale.
There are some very dark moments. Apparently, the kids were really scared by some of the things.
Scary.
When she runs away at the beginning.
Scary. That forest stuff.
Scared
is
by the forest stuff, and then at the end, when the dwarves are running after
the queen herself is quite scary.
Yeah, both as the queen and as the old hag.
Yeah, I remember as a little girl being scared of the scene when she was dipping the apple and. When she does the transformation from the beautiful regal queen to the scary peddler woman with, like, that design of her face is kind of terrifying.
You know the moral of that story, by the way?
Which is what?
Never trust fruit.
Never trust unattractive people is that what too. I take from it.
Never trust unattractive people peddling fruit.
Yeah.
Fruit is poison, I tell you, poison.
Since we're talking about the Grimm's fairy tale, the structure of this movie actually reminded me a lot of the silent films we watched, particularly the Chaplin films, because it didn't really advance the plot with the scenes.
It's episodic.
It's episodic, and the exposition all took place in, like, title cards, even. They would tell you what happened, and then it would be a scene of her, you know, cleaning and flirting with the prince, or a scene of the dwarves mining, and it was... It was just setups for these set pieces that didn't really advance the plot all that much. I mean, like, look how much time is spent discovering the dwarves have dirty hands and then subsequently washing them. Like, these are things that are not important at all, but they turn into these really beautiful, fun things to watch. The plot is not a big part of this movie at all.
I think that's because that focuses on the dwarves, and that was what Disney wanted.
Yes, that was what Disney wanted, and it's probably what made the film work, because they're just so much fun to watch.
They also cut out scenes that focus too much on the dwarves, because then it became too much about them. It almost became the seven dwarves and Snow White. We can talk about the dwarves all night, so let's talk about Snow White first, and when we first meet her, because I just had a few wisecracks to make about that. I thought The Wishing Well is like the 1937 version of a dating website. I'm wishing.
She describes the type of mate she wants.
It's match.com.
Yeah.
And here comes the prince.
Snow White was still, like, a popular character. Little girls still love Snow White.
Yeah. She's an honorable character and a very likable girl. And I guess she's the damsel in distress most of the time. She's not quite Merida from Brave.
No, certainly not. But she's a very good heart. It's not just that she's beautiful, it's that she's very sweet and she's warm and the woodland creatures love her.
And for a princess, although the queen doesn't treat her like a princess, but for a princess, she's more than happy to pitch in. I mean, it's her idea to clean their house and make them food. It's not theirs.
Mm-hmm. She's humble. She's an admirable character in that way. There's not that much depth to her, but nor is there that much depth to Prince Charming. He's actually even more of a kind of one-dimensional character than she is.
Well, the prince doesn't make much of an impression, and I think that's mostly... In fact, I know that's mostly because the animators had trouble animating him.
They rotoscoped them in the end.
Well, and they also cut his part way back because they just couldn't make it work very well.
Really?
I also read somewhere that they fixed some of the... I think it was a shimmer that was on him and some of the animation... And the DVD that got released, which we also own, but the Blu-ray that I bought years ago is even better. I mean, it's a great looking print, of course, and whatever flaws that were in the print, they fixed it on the DVD, let alone the Blu-ray. Actually, the prince is kind of like Zeppo from the Marx Brothers movies.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the prince. Okay, let's talk about someone else.
It really is nothing
to him.
That
joke still works. The queen is probably the most interesting character in this movie. I think one of my favorite things about this film, and there's no doubt that Disney meant this to be the case, and the Grimms, with their fairy tale, meant this to be the case too. In Irony Department Part 1, the queen has to become ugly to win a beauty contest.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be fairest in the land, is this old weird hag. I always wondered, had her plan succeeded, would she go back to her castle and be transformed back to the exact same woman she was? Or
she must have condemned
to be the hag and... Might have been an even more interesting ending if she'd had to stay like that, but had managed to kill Snow White and get away from the dwarves. I think I read this was intentional, that the queen's transformation is Jekyll and Hyde. She's a horrible person, but she's Jekyll, and then she becomes this Hyde kind of thing. And, of course, the Incredible Hulk is another obvious, famous version of that sort of thing, too. And when we get towards the end of the movie, I find it's really handy that the queen has multiple handbooks on disguises, witchcraft, and murder. But then again, stepmothers in fairy tales are almost always cruel and violent. Yeah. Are they ever nice people?
Well, they're just easy villains to pick on. Apparently, there's a version of the fairy tale where it's Snow White's actual mother.
Ooh, that'd be even better.
Well, yeah, but then they were like, no, we need to cool it down a little bit. Because kids would just get way too upset if it was a mother. But stepmothers you can vilify, and she's such a great villain.
The queen using a poison apple is like a typically inept Bond villain.
I know.
Just kill her.
Just kill her.
Who's going to put you on trial for first degree murder if you just stab Snow White in the heart? You're the queen.
I know. It's true.
Just kill her.
Just kill her. Even like when she passes out after she finally takes a bite of the apple. Oh, Love's True Kiss could wake her up. That's not going to happen. Just kill her. Just make sure it doesn't happen. You want her dead so very badly.
She's the original Bond villain, though.
Oh, yeah. It is pretty ridiculous.
Well, the voice of the Queen is Lucille Laverne, and she was brilliant, I thought. Incidentally, this was Laverne's last movie after a 22-year career. She was getting on in years at this point when she did the role. And she did do the voice of the Hag, too, for those who may not have known. I've noticed that, I don't know the exact math, I didn't count the seconds on screen, but she spends more screen time as the witch than she does as the Queen.
Really?
I think she may have. They establish who she is, she established her jealousy, mm-hmm. and then it's the whole MacGuffin the whole time is that she's out to kill her stepdaughter.
Mm-hmm.
So Laverne was the Queen's voice. Adriana Casalotti was the voice of Snow White, who was only 20 when she recorded her lines and songs for this movie. I read somewhere that Disney had some kind of contract where she wasn't to do any other movies, and she did do a few voiceover performances in later films, but she didn't really do anything else, mostly anything else, after this because he wanted that whole mystique about who was Snow White. Mm-hmm. Even though she was a trained opera singer and could have had a great career in movies.
Interesting that she would have agreed to that.
Well, she was being paid to.
And maybe that's part of the reason why the budget of the movie ran its way up to $1.5 million.
Other voices in the film included, not a famous guy, but he's the only person that did more than one of the dwarf's voices, and that was Pinto Colvig. He did Sleepy and Grumpy. Grumpy is my favorite dwarf, and Sleepy has quite a few lines too, but he did those two. Grumpy is the original president of the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
You know what? Talk about how much you love the movie, because this is one of your favorite movies,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
talk
definitely.
About that. Like, it's not my thing, but I actually really want to hear what it is you like so much about it.
It's one of those films that I don't know if I like it as much as I've gotten older. Maybe because I'm outgrowing an animated film, but this does transcend animation, as mm-hmm. the Toy Story films do. Okay, bit of a segue. Toy Story, the original, is also on the AFI list. We're so many months away from seeing that. Toy Story 2 and 3 are also great. If you want to just make them a trilogy and say it's one movie, then that's one of my top 10 films maybe.
Yeah.
Toy Story 3, I saw that 3 years ago when I was in my mid-30s, and it still hammered me in a good way emotionally. This movie doesn't quite do that anymore, but I guess any movie, and an animated movie, maybe sometimes more than any other, can get at that. Because of what you said earlier, you can do things technologically that you can't do in reality. And I don't know, but there's a quality to animated films that when they do it, really, really, really do it right, they can be more touching than almost anything else, I think. I can't even necessarily explain it any better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And Snow White definitely works that way. It is partly Snow White herself. She's very likable, and you root for her, of course. One of the most root-forable characters we've had so far.
She's not very complicated, but mm-hmm. she is still incredibly likable.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't even probably understand or know why she's mm-hmm. got a price on her head. You're simply good-looking, so your stepmother wants to off you. And she doesn't seem to have any ill will towards that. I mean, here's a princess, and it's her kingdom more than the queen's, really. Yeah. It's her bloodline. And yet she goes off to some forest house with some men she doesn't even know and is more than happy to be there.
Yeah.
But as far as just how much I like the movie and why I like the movie, I hope I explained it. I don't really know if I can say much beyond that. There are some movies that are on the AFI list that we'll get to about whether or not they deserve to be on there that it may be hard to explain why. The character I love the most, I said it, my favorite character is Grumpy, but the one I love the most, one of my most favorite characters in any movie as far as just unadulterated, stupid, you want to just hug him, has got to be Dopey.
Yeah. Brain damaged Dopey.
But he's so lovable and so likable and so cute. And he's yet another silent character on the AFI list.
Yeah.
Another one. He's another Harpo, another Frankenstein's monster, another mm-hmm. King Kong, and another character from the first four or five silent movies we had.
Isn't he everybody's favorite dwarf?
He probably is. Although I think I'm not the only one that thinks that Grumpy's pretty great.
Is woman-hating Grumpy.
Although I love that scene where when they go off to the diamond mine, I guess it's supposed to be the first day after she's found their house, the next morning, where he says, "Hey, don't you let anyone in this house," and then she kisses him anyway, and he walks away all angry, and then turns back and has that look on his face like, I like her, actually.
Look at you. You're so charmed by it. It's adorable.
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am adorable. It's true.
One more thing about Dopey, as far as his voice goes, or his lack of a voice, is that he could have been voiced by Mel Blanc of Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny.
No kidding.
And Flintstones fame.
Wow.
But they decided to go mute, probably for the comedy of it, have him being silly and he ain't never tried to speak. kind of a stupid reason for him not to speak.
Is that, did they actually say that?
That's what Happy said.
Oh.
When she's introduced all the dwarfs.
That's their explanation.
That's Happy's explanation.
I thought
it was... Mr. Dopey, he don't speak much. He never tried.
The explanation should have been, well, Mom drank when she was pregnant with him.
The reality. Which is your favorite dwarf? Everyone's got a favorite.
Oh, I think I liked Doc.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The sputtery, bumbly,
yeah, he like thinks he's in charge. Man. Yeah, well, I guess he's in charge. He's kind of, I think he, I like Dopey too, but like I said earlier, I have a cold, dead heart. So things like that don't really win me over that much. I did like Doc.
There were many other dwarf names that were tested. I think something like 40
yeah,
there or 50.
Was, yeah, there was tons of them.
And maybe because I know the movie so well and like it so much, I'm tied into the 7 that they did use. But I don't know that any of the ones that I saw were really better. Daffy, I think, was maybe one of them.
And they were enormously popular. People loved the 7 Dwarfs.
Yeah.
When he received an honorary Oscar for it, Shirley Temple presented him with a normal Oscar along with 7 miniature Oscars, one for each of the dwarfs. And... the dwarfs graced the cover of Time magazine when the movie came out. It was such a big hit. It was a picture of the dwarfs along with the line, "Thank you very much, Mr. Disney."
Oh.
They're incredibly popular. Still to this day, they're really iconic. Yeah, and that goes along with like the multiple ways that this movie has influenced not just film but culture. Like, yeah. Where do you begin? It because of this, there are dozens of princess movies. Because of this, when you go in Toys R Us now, almost 80 years later,
there's still tons of dwarves.
It's well, but there's princess everything. I'm not talking about the dwarves. I'm talking about like princess culture, and it may have started before this. But when I was growing up, Disney princesses were everything, and they were everywhere, and I think that's even more now. We have a niece who's way into princesses. I know every little girl I've ever known has just loved this stuff, and it started with this, and it started with the popularity of this. Before this movie, Disney wasn't even the dominant animation studio in Hollywood, but not at all. I mean, this movie would have bankrupted them if it
hadn't
been
a failure. Disney wasn't really a studio. They built the studio that they became with the profits from this movie.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that there was ever a time when they were not
the
dominant animated
studio. The Disney that owns Marvel, that owns Lucasfilm, that owns the Muppets, and owns what they owned before already.
The number of properties they own, and also the theme parks, and all of the toys and action figures.
They are the ultimate power of the entertainment universe at this
point. They're
just
ubiquitous in culture. Yeah. And this movie was a big part of that. If this movie had failed, if it hadn't have been as good as it was, who knows what would have become of Disney. They were in arrears.
His wife and his brother Roy, who I think is still alive or lived up until sometime in the 2000s, both were against the idea of doing this. And many others, I'm sure, were too.
Yeah, tried to talk him out of it. And he worked really hard, though. Like, when you read about production, he pulled up every stop to make sure the movie was going to be as great as it was.
Including editing a lot of scenes out. He was a tough editor. He wouldn't fall in love with a scene and say, we gotta have it because it's cute or it's fun or it's funny. Because it has to be about advancing the story. And if it didn't do that, then he would slice a scene out. And there were quite a few deleted scenes with this on the DVD.
Oh, there's still
lots
of scenes in the movie that hardly advance the story, though.
Well, in his opinion, they needed to advance the story. Maybe he thought they did.
He thought it was very important that the audience know that Dopey accidentally swallowed the soap and got the hiccups.
If I've read that he was really hung up on the dwarfs' characters and realized that Snow White is the main character, but I'm sure that was a big part of it, is that he thought, these guys are what will sell this movie. And I think they are.
Not that I'm complaining.
Sure.
I think it was a very well-edited film. Like, I'm an editor, and it's always my pet peeve when movies are longer than they need to be. And in a way, it's nice that they kept the exposition really clean and just focused on what really made this picture work, which was the gags. Now, apparently, when they were conceptualizing the film, every single Disney employee would have been paid $5 for coming up with a gag. So that's things like their nose popping out over the baseboard of the bed when they discover Snow White sleeping, or like I just mentioned, Dopey accidentally swallowing the soap and getting the hiccups.
Also,
all those
Dopey's
little
hitch walk he has in some of those scenes. One of the animators came up with it in the scene. I think it's the scene where they go up the stairs when they first discover her there. But wherever it was, Dopey has a little hitch in his walk, and then Disney said that he's got to walk like that for the rest of the movie. And then all the animators wanted to strangle the guy who came up with that idea because they had to redo what they had already done.
But they did it. Mm-hmm. They did it. He made them do it. You know, he made the film that good. He made it take it to that next level where it wasn't just going to be the shortcut. It wasn't going to be any cut corners. He was going to make it the masterpiece that it was.
Yeah. We keep saying that Disney is the man who made this movie, and of course, we all know he was, but he's only the producer. He was not the director. There were six men credited as director, including Ben Sharpstein and David Hand. I always thought of Sharpstein as the one who was the actual director. I remember when I looked this up many years ago, his was the only name, I think, on the IMDb that even appeared. Now they've got all these people on there. But we do all know this as Walt Disney's brainchild through and through. But just to give them credit, as we always talk about directors, that's pretty much all I can really say about them, though. And as far as the writers go, there were no less than eight writers who worked on the script. One who was a woman, Dorothy Ann Blank.
Hmm.
So you've got, 14 people who got kind of top-of-the-line credit creatively, who were not Disney.
And those people weren't even necessarily the ones who, created these characters. There's other levels of creativity in a project like this. The conceptual artist Albert Herder was credited with coming up with the look of all of those characters, including all seven of the dwarfs.
Frank Thomas is another famous animator from this film. He worked for, I think, many more decades on Disney films. I think there's another guy who was also as well known as Thomas. I forget his name, forgive me. If you do know it, please feel free to write in and tell us who was the other guy, because there was some movie that was made maybe 10 or 15 years ago that actually animated those two guys in a scene, very brief scene, like a kind of a Stan Lee kind of cameo. Oh, may have been the Iron Giant, I forget now. But he was one of the great animators of that day and worked on movies for Walt Disney for many, many years. And speaking of Disney again, he was only in his mid-30s when this movie was made.
Oh, wow.
Pretty impressive to be running a studio and everything. We said off the top this was an RKO release. Mm-hmm. We've released a lot of movies lately, in fact, with King Kong and I think a few others. And it was officially an RKO film. It obviously became a Disney property officially in every kind of way, shape, and form as the re-releases went on over the years. But officially at first, it was RKO. And one of the great movies of all time that's coming up in a few months will also be released by RKO. That is Citizen Kane.
A couple of things to add about how this film technologically advanced cinema. Of course, creatively, it's responsible for a lot, but it wasn't the first Technicolor film, but it was the first Technicolor film to really make enough money in the theaters that it prompted people to adopt Technicolor. It was easier for them to do Technicolor, an animated film, because they could pick whatever exposure time they wanted, so they didn't have to worry about having way more lights on set the way that they would on, say, like The Wizard of Oz. The other advancement that it didn't invent, but it used heavily, was the multi-plane cameras, which we're all familiar with in animation. It's the thing that gives moving shots a great deal of depth, because you can make the background move at a different pace from the foreground. Those were both, obviously highly adopted technologies, and another way that Snow White is an important film.
Well, we're nearing the end of the podcast, but we should get a word from our new sponsor, our second one so far, Bev. Hey, Top 100 fans, do you spend most of your day wondering if someone out there is more beautiful than you? Worse, do you have no supernatural way of discovering just who might out-pretty you? Well, it's high time you take a trip down to your local shopping plaza and plunk your money down for a magic mirror. Get yours today and speculate no more. Magic mirror! The gentleman within will tell you answers you don't want to hear. Now back to the podcast.
I don't need a magic mirror because I know that I'm the most, the fairest of the
There
land.
Is no Snow White out there.
Right, exactly. You need to kill. But I can see. I can see how others might want that.
I just thought of another thing the queen could have done if she didn't want to go as far as murdering her. Although, you could argue that had the apple worked, she would have murdered her. But she could just slash her face a few times.
I know, come on, you guys.
She was essentially the queen's prisoner in that castle before she makes her run away.
Come on, evil queen.
What a bad plan.
I know that it is. You were right when you called it the Bond villain plan. It's pretty silly.
Well, you said off the top how much influence this film has had over many other films and everything financially and studio wise and all those things. But let's get back into that here at the end. I think you may have said this earlier, but MGM made The Wizard of Oz in color and as grand a production as it was, partly in response to Snow White.
There you go. Yeah.
And kind of a similar story. Snow White and Dorothy are kind of similar characters, similar kind of arc.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
She doesn't meet seven friends, but yeah.
No, but that
both
is...
are based on previous properties, so it's not really fair to say that MGM ripped off Disney.
Well, it's fair to say that MGM may have said, oh, hey, you know, this story worked in the box office. Let's find another story that's similar.
There are many big fans of this film who are influenced by it, or were back in the day. The two of my favorites are the ones I'll mention now. Sergei Eisenstein, who made the legendary battleship Potemkin, says Snow White was the greatest film ever made.
I read that too. Isn't that incredible?
And Hitler also loved it.
What? Really?
Hitler's been a fan of a few movies we've watched so far, actually.
He's a movie fan.
He liked his films.
Maybe it's a dictator thing. Him and
he wanted
Kim
to be
John
an
Hill.
Artist. He wanted to be an
oh,
artist.
Oh, that's right, too.
Probably thought, I could have drawn that. Why didn't they hire me?
And he likes the eugenics aspect where you you only value beauty.
Because he was such an attractive man. I think you said it earlier that this was expected by just about everyone in the industry to be a big failure. Mm-hmm. But its success made way for Pinocchio and Bambi, Dumbo, and another AFI or Fantasia, which is about a month or two away for us. Not to mention the dozens of great animated pictures that have come since by Disney, by Pixar, and by others too. But
yeah,
those two companies, Warner Brothers for sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those two companies in particular, though, when it comes to big screen animated films, are head and shoulders above everyone else.
And that's just, we're just talking about American films there.
Of course.
You look internationally, it goes on and on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Japanese filmmaker is a great one.
It's a great genre, and it's a great, great legacy for Snow White to leave, and it deserves to be considered, you know, the mother and father of all these films.
Well, there's also been a Snow White ride at Disneyland and a video game and a Broadway
mm-hmm.
musical.
Mm-hmm.
The merchandising, that was new at the time. There actually are toys in a shot, a promotional video of Disney in 1937. So they were even doing that back then.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And as I said earlier as well, they built a studio from the profits from this movie. And that's saying
and
something.
It's still, they say, like, when it's adjusted for inflation, it's one of the top 10 earners of all time. In fact, it was the top earner of all time for a short period of time until it was dethroned by Gone with the Wind.
I find that funny. I read that note, too, that sometimes when that happens, a movie shatters records. Mm-hmm. Not just breaks them, but destroys them. Because Jaws did that in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. It broke the record, I believe, set by The Sting or The Godfather or Sound of Music or whichever it was. And then Star Wars leapfrogged it over it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of, here's something that lasted for a little while, and then Jaws destroys the record, like absolutely obliterates the record, and then it gets obliterated. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing that had happened here. All right, so the awards and the other AFI lists that were made by Snow White. Here we go. Number one animated film on the top 100 genres list. That's not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
The number 10 villain on the heroes and villains list out of 50 villains was the Queen.
That's
no surprise
great.
There.
No,
the Queen
no, I love her.
Slash hag slash witch.
Yeah, she's great. I loved her.
Oh, one thing we should say about her at the end here that has been said by other people, the irony that she's so obsessed with her looks when she's probably better looking than Snow White anyway, if just looking at animation.
It's not your opinion that counts.
It's the mirror.
It's the mirror.
Which is why you should go and get a magic mirror from your local shopping plaza. Did you not hear my endorsement a moment ago? You mentioned the special award that was won at the 1939 Oscars, not 1938. We think of this as a 1937 film because it did get released in 37, but it went wide in 38, as I said at the top. Casablanca had the same thing, where it won the 1943 Oscar, but it's a 1942 film. It's a kind of a strange thing. But it won the award for significant screen innovation, which has charmed millions and pioneered a great new entertainment field.
Outstanding work in the field of excellence.
Mr. Burns invented that award, Bev. And as you said, Disney was presented with a typical standard Oscar and 7 miniature mm-hmm. statuettes. And yet another movie preserved by Congress and the National Film Registry in the inaugural year of 1989. Parting thoughts.
I'm surprised it's not higher on the list. It's a beautiful film. It was incredibly innovative and ambitious, and it's got grumpy. It's got grumpy, and it has the evil queen.
It's got horrible fruit.
Yeah, which, you know, it helps vilify fruit, which I like. But just its sheer influence, it's immeasurable. Immeasurable. And it's an excellent film. On top of that, I'm surprised it's not higher.
Yeah, it could have been a top 25 film, I think, on both lists. But at least it did go up. And not every one of the great films did, from list to list. We got away from the influence. But, of course, Toy Story and Fantasia are also AFI films. I don't think anything else made the list. Pinocchio didn't. And nothing else made by Pixar did. Other films have animated sequences of some sort or another, but officially animated movies is just the three of them. And Snow White stands above the others by a long shot. Toy Story made it only the second time, and it was in, the 90s.
I guess the AFI voters are with me that they're just not... They have cold, dead hearts as well.
They probably do. You're not likely to have a lot of animated films on a list voted on by adults.
Kids' movies are like horror films in that they just don't generally impress critics all that well, at least not when they're accumulating lists of important things. Nobody considers them important, but, you know, I think this movie is evidence of how important they can be and how influential they can be. And it deserves a place at the table of cinema for sure.
And it's got one. Mm-hmm. And if you have not seen the Blu-ray before, then you should either rent it or buy it, because the DVD print was great. I've seen evidence of the film print they had from the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And even that was an improvement over the one that had been out there for many decades before. But yeah, the Blu-ray's leaps and bounds above the DVD, which was leaps and bounds above the 87-ish release. It looks fantastic. So that was our take on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, a very long podcast, which now comes to an end. Because up next on the Top 100 Project is our first taste of Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, and also Howard Hawks, and Hawks' only AFI-er, believe that or not, Bringing Up Baby.
I'm looking forward to that one. Rom-coms. Love it. And I love Katharine Hepburn. I'm actually really jazzed about that. In the meantime, if you would like more from Ryan and me, please visit our website, top100project.com. And you can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @top100project.
I'm wishing. For the one I love. Is that the line? Maybe it isn't. To kiss me on the mouth. And take me to his shiny castle. And leave behind the men who watched over me while I looked like I was dead.
And cut.